Okay. Again, shalom to everybody. We're going to learn something, Davka, connected with Shavuot, but a little different about how to look at the Torah in general. Not necessarily learning Torah, but the main point of Shavuot is accepting the Torah. And there are a lot of common misconceptions regarding Limud Torah, and that's what we're going to see today. Rav Kook deals with the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, Daf Tet Amud Bet, in source number 1. Just give you drop a background. Today, Baruch Hashem, we're spoiled that we all have cell phones with alarm clocks. Wherever you go, you want a reminder, you just put it in. Beforehand, we used to use our watches. But I remember when I was the head of a midrasha about 25, 30 years ago, there's a problem that a man is not allowed to start anything once mincha time comes unless he has somebody to remind him or that he has a set minyan that he always goes to. In other words, you got to make sure that you don't forget. So I remember one of the jobs of the madricha in my midrasha was that she used to come and remind me every day before shkia to make sure that I had already daven mincha or that I will daven mincha. But the Gemara, before there were alarm clocks, tells us that from the time that mincha starts, which is a half hour shod zmaniot after chatzot, after the middle of the day, from the time mincha starts, you're not allowed to start getting a haircut, you're not allowed to sit down and eat, you're not allowed to do anything until you daven mincha. Again, parenthetically, today, it's enough just to set an alarm clock to remind you so that you don't forget. But the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat reads as follows. Me matai hatchalata tisporet. The Gemara says that if you started getting a haircut before mincha time, you don't have to stop to say mincha. In other words, once mincha time starts, you're not allowed to begin something before you daven. But if you started getting a haircut, you started eating a meal before mincha time began, you don't have to stop to daven mincha. So when is it considered that you have started your haircut? Let me ask, anybody have any educated guess? When would you think that it's considered you started your haircut? I would have thought from the time they start cutting your hair. That's what it means, start your haircut. The Gemara says no. The Gemara says, Amar Rebavin Mishiyaniach Ma'aforet Shel Saparim Al Ktefav. From the time you put the apron on the client, he has already, as if it were, begun his haircut, and then when mincha time comes, he doesn't have to stop his haircut to daven. In other words, relatively early. Earlier than I would have thought. Continues the Gemara, Me matai hatchalat merchatz, right? The Gemara had said beforehand that if you start taking a bath, you start taking a shower, and then mincha time comes, then you don't have to stop because you already started. So what does it mean that you have already begun your shower? Amar b'yavin mishiyara mafarato emenu. From the time you take off your outer clothing, once you take off your overcoat, that is, you have begun your shower or bath, and then you don't have to stop when mincha time comes. Umei matai hatchalat bursaki, right? The Gemara had said beforehand that if you start tanning leather, also, if you started already, you don't have to stop when mincha time comes. So what does it mean you've started? What is the definition that you've started tanning the leather? Mishiyikshor ben ktefav. Once you start tying the apron on. It doesn't say from the time you put the leather in the chemicals or from the time you take out the leather or already way beforehand. If you already started putting on the apron, It's as if you are already tanning and you don't have to stop when mincha time comes. When is it considered that you have begun your meal? That, again, if you began your meal before mincha time comes, you don't have to stop. You can continue eating. Rav Amar Mishi Yitol Yadav. Rav says, from the time you do Netilat Yadayim, even if you haven't begun eating yet, you don't have to stop to daven mincha. Rabbi Chanina Amar Mishi Yatir Chagura. He says, even beforehand, even if you didn't do Netilat Yadayim, but if you open your belt, Rashi explains that people used to, when they would sit down to eat, they would like to let their stomach expand. So they would open up the belt and let their stomach expand. And even if you didn't do Netilat Yadayim yet, that is considered that you have already begun your meal and you don't have to stop to daven mincha. And the Gemara answers, V'lo pligi halan v'halu. What's the difference between the opinion that says the beginning of the meal is when you do Netilat Yadayim and the second opinion from the time that you open up your belt? It's just, one is for the people in Eretz Yisrael, the other is in Bavel. That the people in Bavel, they did not open up their belts, and in Eretz Yisrael they did. So, in Bavel, the official beginning of the meal was when you do Netilat Yadayim. Okay. Very innocent-sounding Gemara. What does Rav Kook do with it? Whenever you begin a sugya, you always should ask yourself, what is the hava mina? What would I have thought? And here, like I said before, if the halacha is, we'll fill this in for those who joined us late, if the halacha is that davening is more important than eating, davening is more important than working, davening is more important than, who mentioned it before, Eliana mentioned the hair salons, right? If davening is more important than going to the hair salon, I would have thought that as soon as mincha time comes, just stop whatever you are doing and have priorities. Even if you are in the middle of a haircut and the barber has already taken off half of your hair, stop whatever you're doing and go daven mincha and then go back and finish your haircut, right? Priorities are priorities. That's what I would have thought of. Rav Kook points out, no. Rav Kook points out that the Gemara is telling us not only do you not have to stop what you're doing, but even more so, the Chazal, when they give the definition of beginning, they go back a lot earlier. They're a lot more lenient than I would have thought. Because, okay, my first reaction was, even if you're in the barber's chair and he took off half of your hair, davening is more important. Go and daven. That's what I would have thought. But even if Chazal tell us that, no, you don't have to leave the barber in the middle of the haircut to daven mincha, and if you're started your haircut, you don't have to stop before mincha time. If you start the haircut before mincha time, you don't have to stop. I would have thought that what does it mean started your haircut once he begins cutting your hair? Chazal are extremely, extremely lenient, where they say, no, it doesn't go from the time you take out the scissors. It doesn't go from the time that he cuts your hair. It doesn't go from the time that you sit on the chair. Much before, from the time that you put on the smock, the apron, you already are in the mindset of getting a haircut. And the halacha does not want to stop that. And the question is why? Let's see it inside. Rav Kook Ein Ayah, the very beginning of Perek Aleph Siman Bet. You'll see in source number 2. Kol divrei chachamim she'asu siyag la'Torah, whenever the rabbis made a protective fence to protect around the Torah, shikulim b'shekel ha'kodesh, Chazal weighed them very, very precisely. Sha'alihem en lehosif, kmo shemehem en ligroa. Very interesting. You all know that the Torah, in the Torah, there's an iser d'oraita of lo tosifu velo tigru'u. Right? You're not allowed to add mitzvot. You're not allowed to detract mitzvot. Rav Kook is pointing out the same thing with rabbinical mitzvot. Rabbinical mitzvot are exact. And if they say that from the time that you're putting on the apron to get a haircut, you already don't have to stop when mincha times to daven, that is exact. And Yidavka should not be machmir more than that. Now this is something very interesting. Because when I was growing up, I have cousins in Borough Park and in Williamsburg, and I always had I was always under the impression that the more machmir a person is, the more religious he is. And this is what we're talking about today. I know Tehillah, Ricky, Aiden, we were talking last week in in Questions in Emunah about modern orthodoxy. And what we're going to learn today is very, very connected with the ideology of religious Zionism. And I should say non-compromising modern orthodoxy, or real modern orthodoxy, not compromising modern, but the real thing. Why? The Prima Gadim points out a very interesting halacha, that there is no chumrah which doesn't bring, on the other hand, a kula. People think, well, you know what, I'll play it safe, I'll be machmir, I'll take the more stringent opinion. The Prima Gadim was one of the greatest poskim. He says, always ask yourself, at the account of what is it coming? For example, classic example, many of you, maybe most of you, are more religious than your parents, right? Today, in today's generation, I think most of the girls that come to most of the midrashot are probably even, for sure by the end of the year of the midrashah, even a little more religiously motivated than their parents. And then when you come home and say, there's a certain issue of kashrut that your parents are more lenient, and you, in your private life, you are more machmir, who says that that chumrah is more important than kibud aveim? Do you all see that? In other words, you think that you're taking the more machmir opinion, but maybe it's better to be machmir on kibud aveim than on something in kashrut, which isn't necessarily halacha. Another classic example. Bezrat Hashem, when you get married, you'll see that there are a lot of confusing halachot regarding Tarat HaMishpacha. When is a woman considered a nida? When is she not considered a nida? And anybody who learns for the rabbinate learns that the major problem here is that you're not allowed to go, to move in this direction or in that direction. In other words, if you are in doubt, you can't just say, you know what, let's be machmir and distance yourself from your husband for another 7 days. Because distancing yourself from your husband is an aveira if you don't have to. There's a mitzvah to have family intimacy. So if so, and the opposite is also the true, if you want to allow a woman to be with her husband, you can't do so at the expense of being lenient in ilchot nida. So what do? The answer is, you got to be exact. And that is what Rav Kook is saying here. By the way, this issue comes up sometimes regarding food. Sometimes you say, well, I don't know, did milk fall in? Did milk not fall in? Well, if you can't eat it, so you all know you can't eat it. But if halachically you are allowed to eat it, why should you throw it out? Because that's a problem of Baal Tashchit. You all know what Baal Tashchit is, right? You're not allowed to stomp to throw out food. Or, you know what? maybe the best example. You know that we, obviously, if a sidur or a Devar Torah, you finished with it, you don't throw it in the garbage pail. You put it in the Geniza, right? Now, what goes in the Geniza? So some opinions say only Psukim. If it's not Psukim, but Devar Torah, you don't put it in the Geniza. Others say just God's name, Yudke Vavke, that goes in the Geniza. Others say, all Divrei Torah go in the Geniza. But you know what? If you say, hey, I want to be Machmir, and I want to, you know, I saw somebody mentioned a sort of a Dvar Torah while telling a joke in the newspaper, and I want to put the whole newspaper in the Geniza, well, you're turning the Geniza into a garbage pail. Do you see the problem? If you don't have to put something into the Geniza, you're not allowed to put it into the Geniza. In other words, rabbinical mitzvot are exact. And just like you can't be more lenient, you can't be more machmir, because when you're machmir, you're being lenient on the expense of something else. And here also, what Rav Kook is pointing out, is that the Torah is a living Torah. Let's continue. V'chasher ha-chokhma Elohit shiyara, eich la'mid et kol tzadei ha-chayim al mechonam. When the wisdom of the Torah decided how to live a life of godliness, they are telling us how to live a life of godliness, not how to be religious. We are meant to live a life of godliness. Livilti chidat ha-pu'ulot ha-musariyot ha-nizgevot al yedei mi'ut rishimon b'ma'asim. Do not, oy vavoy, if you mix up your priorities. If somebody has to decide between davening and getting a haircut, it's very clear davening is more important than getting a haircut, period. But if you are already in the middle of a haircut and your mind is set on this project, then Habibi, that is where you are. And the last thing that the Chazal want to do is to make life difficult. Chazal do not want to make the Torah into a burden. I'll give you another example. I don't know if you people know, I remember when I was a kid, when you're 11, 12 years old, everybody likes to brag how much I fasted on Yom Kippur. Do you remember that? Did you do that as kids? Right? Hey, I just broke my fast at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And he says, well, I broke my fast at 2 in the afternoon. And there's always one kid who said, what do you mean? I fasted the whole day.
I never fasted until after my bar mitzvah.
That is the halacha. The Mishnah Berurah says, that you fast a little. You fast a little. For example, if you're used to eating breakfast at 8. So if you're chinuch age, so instead of eating at 8, eat at 9. And then the next year, eat at 10. The next year, eat at 11. And by the time you're bar mitzvah, you know, you're fasting till 1 o'clock or something like that. But the Mishnah, you're allowed to fast a little more. But the Mishnah Berurah says you're not allowed to let children fast before their bat mitzvah or before their bar mitzvah. Why? Because subconsciously, that child is going to harbor a negative feeling against halacha. And even if he wants to brag, I fast and I'm an adult, inside, he's going to have that feeling, oh, this is terrible. I'm hungry. I want to eat. And that is why somebody who's not ready to fast, you don't educate him with fasting more than is difficult. And that's what Rav Kook is trying to point out. The Torah is a Torat Chaim. It is a living Torah. I think I might have mentioned to you once that one of the things that I do in... just mention this last week, Shior? Tila, remind me if I did, in the questions in Emunah Shior, where one of the things that I do in Rav Kook's archives is I go through the old newspaper articles from the 1920s, 1930s, where Rav Kook was still alive, and they have different articles about him. Anyway, there's an article where he invited the head of Maccabi. Anybody ever hear of Maccabi Tel Aviv? They are the sports team in Israel. And the problem was already in the years Tafresh Tzadi, they were being Mechalil Shabbat. They were playing on Shabbat, which caused people to drive on Shabbat. And Rav Kook invited the head of Maccabi to a meeting, and he wanted to ask him to move the games that they should not be on Shabbat. And by the way, he succeeded. And at the end of the meeting, the head of the football team, the soccer team, comes out, and the reporters obviously come with their microphone and they ask him, what did the chief rabbi have to say about soccer? So the guy says, well, first of all, Rav Kook told me that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves soccer. Why? Because he is called a Melech Chafetz Bachayim. He is the king who loves life. You remember that from the davening of Yom Kippur? Zachreinu lechayim, melech chafetz b'chayim. And then he said, well, and Rav Kook asked us, that soccer, he said, soccer is good, but please don't play it on Shabbat. And he agreed. Now, somebody who would be skeptical would say, you know, how can you trust something that's written in the newspaper? Or, you know, some people have selective hearing, so this guy heard what he wanted to hear. But knowing Rav Kook, I have no doubt that nobody except Rav Kook would have thought of combining the idea that God is a Melech Chafetz Bachayim with soccer, with sports. Because that is Rav Kook's Hashkafa. And that is directly connected, A, with Torah Eretz Yisrael, where in Israel, it says in the Zohar, the stress in Eretz Yisrael is not on Yirah, but on Ahavat Hashem. In Galut, the stress is on fearing, because everything is based on fearing. In Galut, we feared the Goy. We feared pogroms. We feared Holocaust. We ran here, we ran there. In Eretz Yisrael, life is not based on fearing. It's based on love. And our loving Father in heaven, He wants us to be happy campers. And this is something that we might have mentioned once. Everybody knows the Shach that says that you shouldn't learn Kabbalah till the age of 40. Right? You heard that? That's not the original Minhag. That was after Shabtai Tzvi messed everybody up with his false messianism and Kabbalah. The original Minhag is not to learn Kabbalah until you're married. Why? Two reasons. Number one, you don't have an ice cube's chance in hell of understanding the depths of the world until you understand men, or until men understand women. And even if you have brothers and you have fathers, you do not understand men until you're married. I'll just say the other point so I don't forget, because the other point is what's even more important for our context. And the second reason why you shouldn't learn Kabbalah until you're married is because only once you have children can you begin a little to understand how HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates to us as a father relates to his children. Before you have children, you don't understand why your parents threaten you here or punish you here or make you do this or make you say that. When you have kids, you'll do the same thing to your children because you're older and you are mature. And that is when you can begin to understand why Hashem also makes us say this, not do that, wear this, don't wear that. And all of it is for our benefit as a loving father. Aiden, what do you want to say?
Were there any women Kabbalists?
No, not really. There is basically a minhag for women not to learn Kabbalah.
Oh, is it like Gemara almost?
Sorry?
Is it like Gemara?
No, for a different reason. But you know what? After you're married, and you know what? Before you learn Kabbalah, first learn Tanakh, Halakha, Midrash, philosophy, Musar. By the way, the same thing for boys. I would say the same thing. After you finish the first couple of floors, ask your local rabbi about learning Kabbalah. Because it's not black and white, Bikitsur. But if your question was, were there any great Kabbalists women, the answer is no. It's not an easy sugya. Anyway.
Question.
Sure.
This makes a lot of sense about the whole just as you shouldn't take away, you shouldn't add a few more machmir. So then, why are there so many very machmir people in the ultra orthodox world? Do they not agree with this?
Daniela, I could not have planted a better question at a better time. That is exactly what I wanted to get into. Let's jump to source number 5, where we're going to learn a little from the Talmud Yerushalmi. Now, usually when we quote the Talmud, you all know, we're quoting the Talmud Bavli, which was written in Chutz Laaretz, in Bavel. There is also a Talmud Yerushalmi, which is written in Eretz Yisrael. It's much more difficult to learn, and also was written earlier. And that's why, in general, it's not learned so much. Also, there's no Rashi. There are no classic commentaries on the Yerushalmi. Nevertheless, when you see the Talmud Yerushalmi, you begin to understand that Judaism in Eretz Yisrael is significantly different than the Judaism that Daniela mentioned that is found today in Lakewood and Borough Park. Let's look in the Talmud Yerushalmi, Source 5, Masechet Shabbat, Perek Aleph Halacha Gimel. Tana b'shem Rabbi Meir, kol mishu kavua be'eretz Yisrael, whoever lives in Eretz Yisrael, ochel chulyo b'tahara, does netilat yadayim, also for secular bread, like we do, netilat yadayim for secular bread. Originally, netilat yadayim was just for truma. Umedaber b'lshon ha-kodesh, and if you speak Hebrew, excuse me, muftach lo shum michaye olam haba. You are promised to share in the world to come. What's the common denominator between these mitzvot? When somebody lives in Eretz Yisrael, even the secular is holy. The fruit that you eat is holy. Walking on a tiul is holy. Speaking Hebrew, you could even be telling a joke in Hebrew, but it is holy because it's in Lashon HaKodesh. The people are holy, the rocks are holy, the buildings are holy. Where even the secular is holy, we do not have a problem with life. We don't have a problem with the physical world. And that's why the Chatam Sofer writes, for example, first he quotes the Chovot Al Vavot, which says that the more a person invests in his spiritual, the physical world, the more it's at the expense of his spirituality. It's either or. The Chatam Sofer says that's only in Chutz Laaretz. Because in Chutz Laaretz, when you go to work, it's not holy. When you plant a tree, it's not holy. When you walk on a hike, it's not holy. When you go to work in the morning, it's not holy. The fruit that you eat is not holy. On the other hand, in Eretz Yisrael, where everything that you do is holy, then we do not have to combat or conflict the spiritual and the physical, because the physical is also spiritual. And this is, we don't have time to elaborate, but this is the difference between Kiddusha and Tahara. Tahara is a lower level. It's somebody who stays away, who's machmir, and stays away from the physical world. He stays away from physical pleasure. But a higher level is Kiddusha, somebody who reveals godliness in his dress, in his speech, in his parnasa, in his intimate relations, in his jokes, in everything that he does. The Talmud Yerushalmi similarly, let's look in source number 6. In Masechet Nedarim Perek Tet Halacha Aleph. Girls, you will not find this in the Talmud Bavli. It says about somebody who's machmir. Again, the question that was asked. Lo dayecha ma she'asra Torah, ele she'ata mevakesh le'asor alecha dvarim acherim. It's not enough that which the Torah prohibits. Why do you look to make life difficult? That is not the approach in Lakewood. That is the approach of Eretz Yisrael, where the physical world is not anti-spiritual. You don't need to accept more chumrot on yourself. Source number 7, the Talmud Yerushalmi, Masechet Kiddushin, Perek Dalet Halacha Yud Bet. Atid Adam Liten Din V'cheshbon Al Kol Ma Sherata Eino V'lo Achal. A person, when he gets up to heaven, is going to be asked, did you at least try each of the pleasures that God created? If you did not eat a creme bola, anybody ever taste a creme bola? Well, so you can answer the question. But if you didn't, you should go out. Because according to the Talmud Yerushalmi, God is going to ask you, why did I invest so much time and effort in creating this and this and this and that, and you're just staying away from the physical pleasure? Girls, do you see the difference between Galut Torah and Eretz Yisrael Torah? Now, this is connected, again, the girls from Questions in Emunah will excuse me, because we mentioned this just last week. This is the difference why the Navi, Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, they lighten Chutz Laaretz to darkness, to night, and Eretz Yisrael is likened to day. Why? Because when you come into a dark room, the more furniture that there is, the more you're going to trip. On the other hand, when you come into a light room, the more furniture, the more plants, the more beautiful it is. And that is why Rav Kook calls his books, the cookbooks, Orot, the light. Because this is the Torah of the light of Eretz Yisrael, where the physical world, whether it be sports, whether it be going to work, all of this is holy. Now here I must add that this approach in Chutz La'aretz is problematic. Because in Chutz La'aretz, when you start going to university, yeah, you're taking a step towards assimilation. And in Chutz La'aretz, the physical world is not holy. And the sports is not holy. And so the question was, so is religious Zionism just like modern Orthodoxy? The answer is, in Eretz Yisrael, yes. But in Chutz La'aretz, it's a problem. In Eretz Yisrael, the more trees that we have, we don't trip up on them. But they are, as a matter of fact, it's a mitzvah. To settle the land of Israel is a mitzvah. Not only that, Rabbi Yehuda Levi in source number 8 says, "Ein kniyatcha bimei atanit yoter krova el Elokim misimchatcha bimei haShabbatot veHamoadim." When you fast on Yom Kippur, yes, you are close to God, but so too when you eat a steak or eat a nice blintzes or wear new earrings or a nice dress on Chag HaShavuot, because both are from the same God. And there's a time for seriousness, and there's a time for happiness. So getting back to Rav Kook, because we got to finish up, Rav Kook is telling us that the Chazal go exactly in the direction of the Torah. The Torah fires an arrow, and the rabbis continue the arrow in the same direction. The Torah said, be exact. Yes, ideals are more important than physical pleasure, but don't demand from a person more than he can take. And we discussed this once, if you remember, when we learned about Chazon HaTzimchonut, when Rav Kook says, yes, there's an ideal to be vegetarian, but God does not say, thou shalt not eat meat, because he knows that would be too difficult for man. We would not be happy campers. He is our loving Father, who wants us to be happy. Melech Chafetz B'chaim. So what does he do? God does something ingenious. He drops us hints. He writes in the Torah, you can't shecht a mother and its calf on the same day. You have to shecht in a way that's painless. You have to shoo away the mother before you take the eggs. Tzar Ba'alei Chaim. The Torah tells us animals have feelings. And little by little, as mankind matures, right, evolution, mankind will get the message, yeah, it really would be more moral if we do not eat animals. That is eventually going to be the goal. But Hashem does not make life unbearable. Chazal do the exact same thing. They tell us, yeah, davening mincha is more important than getting a haircut. Davening mincha is more important than eating. But if you have your mind set on eating, it's davka good to do that which you planned on doing. And here, we don't have time to elaborate, but Rav Kook points out that one of the problems, and today, by the way, it's a lot more problematic than ever it was before, people don't know what they want. Part of postmodernism is people don't know what they want. And Rav Kook says, it is good to know what you want. If you plan on tanning leather, go for it. Or in the words of Nike, just do it. Halacha does not want to get in the way of life. Adrab, it's the same God who created life, who also gave us the Torah. So, that is true. Mincha is more important than tanning leather. But if you have already begun tanning leather, not just that you've put the hide in the chemicals, but even way before, even if you're just putting on the apron and you just began, you haven't even begun the process. Rav Kook says, that's how he's explaining Chazal, you are already into that plan. Finish it. Be a serious person. By the way, if you're planning on being a shoemaker, be a good shoemaker. Chazal tell us that Chanoch, you all heard of Chanoch, he was a great tzaddik. Why was he so great? Chazal say he was a shoemaker. And he used to sew every stitch in the best way possible to make the customer satisfied. If you're working in a high tech, do it right. If you're a mother, whatever you're doing, do it right. That's what life wants. That's what Hashem wants. That's what life is about. The Torah is part of that life, and the Torah wants it to be a Torah Chaim. And that is Torah Eretz Yisrael. That is the Torah of Rav Kook, where we are meant to live an entire life of Kedusha, where the physical is also holy. Any questions?